Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolution Network Hardcore 2.0 is coming your way. This is episode 173. Today we're doing a really fun episode. Think about microdosing, the pros and cons with parapharma. So Mobster and I are going to go over that. It's going to be a really interesting podcast. We're going to give you all the information about it, the positives, the negatives, what microdosing is, why some people microdose. We're going to talk about why some clinics like it. We're going to talk about how to microdose with parapharma. But first, let me just remind everybody, we are on Spotify, we are on Apple. Some of you are listening to us via the website as well. I like to kind of travel when I'm driving and listen to the podcast and kind of see areas where I can improve, where Mobster can improve, and he does the same thing while he's training and doing his walking and his cardio. And listen, we need your support on the podcast. Make sure you're smashing the like button every chance you get on these podcasts on as many platforms as you can. Make sure you're commenting. Make sure you're leaving reviews and leaving the stars and all that stuff. This allows the algorithms to pick up our podcast. So it's very, very important that you do that so we can keep this podcast going. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to keep it going. So let's get into it right away, Mobster. And I'll bring you in first because this is the topic that you wanted to talk about. It's been kind of debated lately a lot in bodybuilding. Yep. Get into what microdosing is.
Right. So in previous pre-shows, Steve and I have discussed off air a couple of theories and occasionally stuff like this comes up on the forums. So as an example, and I mentioned this to Steve yesterday, some years ago, one of the big men's magazines, GQ, Esquire, etc., had a little 3-4 paragraph article, Steve, referencing the idea that Silicon Valley experts, professionals, had kind of theoretically got into the idea of microdosing, and the example in the article, Steve, was mushrooms, shrooms, as we say, magic mushrooms, and other fungi, with the idea of increasing their creativity. Now, we know you can go back to the 60s and 70s where people were trying to microdose LSD. And the idea is they're not looking to get high. You're not looking to become somehow addicted and see the other side of the universe, see how everything works or whatever. It's what you're looking for, and especially in the Silicon Valley example, was the idea that you just open up a few synapses, an extra few cells in the brain, you increase, even with certain stimulants, if you can increase blood flow. And the idea of the theory is that if you increase blood flow to the brain, somehow your thinking becomes more lucid, you're able to make different connections, and so on and so forth. So microdosing as a theoretical idea from all kinds of medications, and I'll talk about that briefly, is not a new thing. It's been around since probably people were getting high back in the 60s with recreational drugs, as I say. When I was reading the article, I'm thinking, Steve, this is the late 90s, early 2000s. And of course, what they were trying to do was come up the next iPhone, the next Apple, the next pad, the next sort of evolution in Silicon Valley products so that their company becomes worth billions and billions of dollars. And there was a lot of companies, as you know, Steve, that on paper were worth great amount and they didn't amount to anything. And others like Apple and eBay and Facebook and so on and so forth, Google especially, become absolutely huge. Amazon is a good example again. So some companies tried and failed, others succeeded fantastically. And if you can hook into that, that would be amazing. So the idea of microdosing more regular drugs, including over-the-counter drugs, kind of occasionally comes to the fore. But you and I have discussed on multiple shows some of the more practical medical applications of testosterone derivative steroids, anabolic and catabolic, in treating certain medical conditions and the reasons why esters, we'll talk about that later on in the show, were created. The very early forms of testosterone, Steve, were pretty much testosterone, no ester. Or they required multiple pillings because they had a half-life of 2 or 3 hours. You'd have to inject or take methyl testosterone, I believe was one of the very early ones, you would have to take that 2 or 3 times a fucking day. Never mind once a day, like microdosing or whatever else. So over time, different steroids came along and they lasted longer in the system. You then had products like Sustanon, which was made up of multiple doses of testosterone. So you would have this quick, short-acting, medium-acting, longer-acting, great for immediate medical treatment, something that required perhaps once a week, and then the person could feel better within a few days because already testosterone was working its magic. And then an even longer ester, so that, you know, that once-a-week application. They're getting something in the first 24 hours, something in the first couple of days, and something in the first week. So we know why these things were created. We know how they work. Now, the argument then becomes, Steve, does this have a practical application in bodybuilding? And I'm going to, right at the front of the show, I'm going to say it makes no difference to the end result. None whatsoever. There is no one to date, even with the clickbait, some stuff, kind of things that we occasionally see on social media, but especially on the forums, including those that like the microdose, that will argue better gains. So there has to be other reasons, positive reasons, negative reasons. When I'm taking an anabolic steroid stack cycle, including parapharma products, when Steve's taking an anabolic stack cycle with parapharma products, we're mostly looking for the end result, which is usually bigger muscles, stronger muscles, leaner muscles. That's pretty much it. And to my argument is, if you can't show me more muscles, leaner muscles, stronger muscles, then there has to be other reasons. Now, there are some practical ones. As I say, there's also negative in terms of the effects on a person, and arguably, which Steve and I will get into, also the reasons why some clinics call it the gold standard, and I'm literally going to tear that one a new one. So what do you think about microdosing, not just of anabolic steroids, Steve, but all kinds of drugs?
So you went over a lot of stuff, but you didn't actually answer what microdosing is. So let me explain specifically what microdosing is.
Steve's right? Correct. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, David. I was going to say, I didn't want you to be defensive on that. So microdosing means, and Mops are kind of alluded to it. So instead of doing, let's say, 250 milligrams of testosterone cypionate twice a week, I'm going to do 50 milligrams every day of testosterone cypionate. And over the course of a week, you know, that's going to come out to 50 times 7 is about 350. So you do like 75 milligrams a day of testosterone cypionate, multiply that by 7 days, and it'll come out to something around 500 milligrams, for example. So instead of doing it, you know, once a week, twice a week, you microdose it. Or let's say you're doing TRT and you're doing 100 milligrams a week of testosterone cypionate, okay? Your doctor puts you on that much. Instead of doing 100 milligrams a week and doing it in one injection, you spread out the injections to, let's say, 4 or 5 times a week instead. And you do smaller amounts. So you would do, let's say, 33 milligrams 3 times a week. Or you do 25 milligrams 4 times a week. That would be an example of microdosing. So as you can see, it's more injecting, but you're doing less amount. So that would be the definition of microdosing. Mobster, you want to touch on that?
No, Steve is 100% correct. An obvious thing that can be, and we'll get into this as well, Steve, it can come down to, are you comfortable injecting, and specifically intramuscular, what we call IM, into the muscle, versus, for example, sub-Q. And being comfortable with daily injections and not minding the frequency of pinning versus the volume of product. For example, if you and I, Steve, were running a stack, and we might actually combine both products that, for example, if we're using two products in a stack, then we might put them both into the same syringe and we might inject both at the same time. Well, that might mean, and this is not uncommon, 2 to 3 mil per injection. Whereas microdosing, fairly obviously, specifically even in a stack, but let's say it's a solo, and especially so in when it comes to testosterone replacement therapy, TRT, it'd be 0.5 mil or even 0.25 mil, And typically, because it's such a small volume, it tends to be with a what we call an insulin pin, a slim pin, a much finer needle with a much smaller amount. And so you've also got some people, when they talk about volume, and it can sometimes depend on their pinning technique, how they inject themselves, that put in 2 or 3 million. And I'll give you an example here, Steve. I have heard of people doing 4 mil at one time. Now, that's not even a whole teaspoon, but it's a lot when you're injecting it. So some people would argue that I don't want to pin 3 mil, 4 mil, or even 5 mil, which would be ridiculous, at one time. That's a lot of volume of oil product going into the muscle. And that in and of itself can be uncomfortable. Certain specific muscles more uncomfortable than others. So the idea that you can put in 0.5 mil or 1 mil or even less more frequently and not have that level of discomfort. And I'm just thinking of an example from the local gym, Steve, where the gym owner called me over to the counter one day. This was some years ago. And he says, have you ever seen that young man over there? And I said, no. He says, he's literally just walked in, done 4 mil in the toilet, and he's working legs, and he'd injected into the quads. And I just joked, us, we're never going to see him again. And we didn't, Steve. You just know that he's going to go home with a probably sore ass or sore quads, not only sore from the injection, but from the workout. Imagine somehow that he's going to blow up like Superman in 5 minutes and then be in absolute fucking bits the following day, both with muscular soreness and soreness from a ridiculous amount that he'd injected. So I think it's sometimes a psychological, the idea that it might be more comfortable, more easy to do than anything else, Steve, honestly. But yeah, when it comes to the actual process, it is a small, low volume, small amount of testosterone, could be more than one product at a time, more than one steroid, multiple injections per week, typically every single day. So that when it comes to, I think there's one argument, Steve, and I would say no on testosterone, so therefore anabolic steroids, I'm not seeing the point, and we'll get into the specifics. There is some argument when it comes to, and you and I just done a show on this, when we talked about the GLP-1 products, semaglutide included, etc., the type 2 diabetic drugs, and because some people get nauseous with the slightly higher milligram per injection, they've found that if they go 0.5 milligram or 1 milligram instead of 2.5 milligrams, and they keep their food under control when they're eating, the more frequent injections, the microdosing of those products arguably works, and perhaps some other peptides. But I'm not convinced on the testosterone, because I'll let Steve talk briefly here. Steve, describe esters and the half-lives and the idea that, for example, if you're injecting a short, medium, or long-acting ester, it's still in your system. So, and again, this is availability of product. Let me touch on this before I bring Steve in. There is an argument to be made, certainly back in the day, we talked about availability of anabolic steroids of all kinds and all esters. And we've used the analogy on various shows, Steve, when we talked about getting from your local dealer, going to a pharmacia, having to buy a product from the trunk of your dealer's car in the gym car park. And what you had in those days, listeners, and it's not like this now, thank goodness, is what you had was a very limited supply of a very small amount of products with what ester was available. You didn't get a choice. You couldn't say, I want a medium length acting ester of testosterone. This is what I've got. This is what you can have. That's it. You go online now, and I'm including companies like Parapharma, and when it comes to testosterone, never mind other anabolic steroids, there is pretty much available all of the esters all of the time and multiples of different products. Just on Parapharma alone, Steve, I think it's 45 unique products. So this is not 3 different kinds of steroids in the trunk of some person's car. Describe the whole theories and science behind esters as well, Steve.
So the whole reason that steroids were modified, and as Monster said at the beginning, when they originally started playing around with the hormones, there was no ester to them. So there are anabolic steroids that don't have esters attached. That would be the example of testosterone, no ester testosterone or test suspension. And that would be in and out of your system and, you know, within an hour. So That would be an option for those of you who don't want to, who are getting tested. Like, let's say you're a professional athlete, you're a linebacker in the NFL, you would take testosterone suspension, and when they called you up to go get tested for steroids, by the time you went and did the test, you know, 2 days later, 3 days later, you're going to test, it's not going to be in your system to be found out. But if they test you after you took a anabolic steroid that has an ester attached, like all of them pretty much do, unless, again, you're taking something like trenoester or testosterone suspension or something like that, basically testosterone based, then you're going to, it's going to be in your system longer. The ester is going to have a half-life, and it's also going to have an active life, and it's also going to have a detectable time period. So it just depends on the particular steroid. With Decadurobolan, for example, it could be detectable for up to 18 months. So Sean Merriman, he used to play for the Chargers back in the day. It was famous. He got suspended and he got fined a lot of money because they found Deca in his system because he was stupid. And he didn't realize that if you take Deca, it's going to be, it could be detectable in your system for a long time, for a year and a half, up to a year and a half. So the whole way they do it scientifically is they will add esters. The way they add esters is they add it to the hydroxyl group, which is the esterification process, and it's done to not require you to microdose. So the way it works is they cause the hydroxyl group to react with the carboxylic acid to form an ester in water. And this, they do this in a lab using organic chemistry techniques, and they will isolate and purify the steroid ester. There's also another way to do this, and it's very less common to add esters, which is done by adding enzymes. So basically, it's a slow-release process, just like when you go to the drugstore and you see the Mucinex or whatever drug on the shelf, and one says 12 hour, one says 24 hour, one says 48 hour. They modify these drugs purposefully so that it's a more of a slow release. So when you take it, it's not all in your system at once. It's going to slowly get into your system. So I would argue, when it comes to microdosing, and this is not an argument, this is a fact, and it can be confirmed with blood work. But let's say you microdose something like testosterone cypionate, which has, let's say, a 10-day half-life, okay?
Yeah.
You take the testosterone cypionate, in one dose, you take 100 milligrams, and then a week later, you take another 100 milligrams, and a week later, you do it per week, 100 milligrams. After 5 or 6 weeks, you go get your blood work done. Your testosterone levels should be around 600-700 nanograms per deciliter. But if you were to start off microdosing and only doing, let's say, 25 milligrams four times a week, and then the next week you do 25 milligrams four times a week, what's going to happen there? It's actually going to take longer to peak in your system because you're taking less of amount initially. So that 25 milligrams that you're taking is going to slow release, and the next 25 milligrams is going to slow release.
Yes.
And then over time, it's going to leave your system. So it's counterproductive because it's going to take longer for it to reach peak in your system. So the whole idea of this, you're not going to outsmart the esterification process microdosing it. It's going
just on that basis alone, Steve, and you and I are going to talk about TRT in a moment. The idea that you're going to use a long-acting, an ester that takes a long time to leave your system, and then microdose it, it's kind of like engaging first the gear on your car and then trying to get it to reverse. Why have you taken – you'd be better off, arguably, Steve, if you're going to microdose, why not use a shorter ester? Why not use something that's in and out of your system relatively quickly, like an ACE? Prop. Why use something that's a longer acting ester? And yet this is kind of almost the argument when it comes to TRT. And in fact, arguably, it makes almost some sense, and I'll argue against this momentarily, to microdose for TRT, and there are actual clinics that have put up, and I'm literally going to reference those shortly, that one clinic specifically called microdosing TRT the gold standard. So let me get that into that now. So this is TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, versus what you and I might argue is the performance enhancement aspect of using anabolic steroids. And just to be clear on that, for any listener that's coming to the show first for the new type, brand spanking new, never listened to shows, literally just starting to research anabolic steroids. Performance enhancement is what I touched upon earlier on, which would be being faster, being leaner, being more muscular, being stronger, whatever. This is the typical reason why athletes and guys and girls that go to the gym would use anabolic steroids, whereas testosterone replacement therapy, proper testosterone replacement therapy, is literally replacing the testosterone in your body. So the argument there is thus, it is the idea of having a level, like constant, more or less the same amount in your system on the basis of a, say, medium to longer acting ester microdose. So you have a constant level. It doesn't change. It doesn't go up and down of testosterone in your body. Now, I said to Steve in a pre-show that there might be some users, and we have seen the odd one or two, is a very small percentage. I'd say less than 1%, Steve, that are that sensitive to any kind of testosterone. And what you will occasionally see, and it's a very small percentage, like I said, is that someone who's got naturally low testosterone levels, but's kind of got used to it, goes and gets tested, finds that their levels are quite low, and the doctor says, you know what, this might actually reflect on other aspects of your health, your medical conditions, etc. Let's get you on a low dose of testosterone. And they put them on a typical TRT protocol. It varies anywhere between once a week, Steve, as you said earlier on, and again, very small amount here, 90 to 120 milligrams of some form of testosterone, typically CPN-8 or enanthate, up to the NHS protocol, and I only saw this yesterday, of 1,000 milligrams of testosterone and decanate, which is the arguably the longest acting to clear your system, ester, every 6 weeks. I was like, wow. And the problem with the argument for and against goes thus, that previous TRT used to be once a month, again, the equivalent of 90 to 120 milligrams a week. And at the beginning, i.e. just after you'd had the injection, those that were especially sensitive would feel fucking amazing, like Superman, like they were 18 all over again, and they were going to go out and kick ass. 30 days later, when the product was dropped and dropped and dropped over those 30 days, depending on yester, because they were incredibly sensitive to how they felt around testosterone, they felt like they did before they did TRT, or close to it. So the idea then becomes, let's have it a little bit more constant. Now, I've actually argued against this in terms of nature and the clinic, and I'll reference this shortly. So the clinic essentially said, this is more like nature. And it goes, no, it's not. You have variations of testosterone levels through the day, through the week, through the month. For example, testosterone and other hormones wake you up in the morning, Steve. When the sun comes up, there is a small but significant boost in the amount of testosterone that your body releases. It's one of the hormones that literally wakes you up because the sun is in your eyes. And there are arguments to peaks and troughs through the day. So it's lows and highs. Typically, and this is for men, you have a small peak mid-morning, around 10 o'clock, roughly 4 hours after you've woken up. And I've talked about the whole body temperature thing and best time to train as well on other shows. And again, later in the afternoon, typically between 4 and 6 o'clock. And again, typically about 4 hours before you go to bed. And of course, also as the sun is starting to go down. So of course, that varies through the year. Therefore, your testosterone levels will vary through the year. They vary through the day. There is no constant trickle of exactly the same amount the whole time. So it has to come down to how that person specifically performs, or more than that, how they specifically feel on testosterone. And again, for performance enhancement, that makes zero difference. It shouldn't be a question of how you feel. It's just how lean you are, how muscular you are, how strong you are. You can go into the gym feeling shitty and still have an epic workout and still look fantastic. And you can go into the gym feeling great, feeling on top of the world. I've just won $50 on the lotto. The wife's offered me a blowjob. We're going to have anal later on. The world is great. Everything's marvelous. And have a crappy workout for some reason. And it's not necessarily connected for the specific testosterone levels in and of that moment. So and one of the other things that occurred to me when it comes to the clinic, calling it the gold standard, and I'm actually going to say this as a negative as well, Steve. We've done TRT shows and we've talked about the typical way that testosterone used to be given in TRT therapy and the typical amounts that people used to pay. Now, this amount varies and it's probably changed in the last couple of years since we started doing some of these shows and talked about it. But it used to be that you paid for one injection per month, especially in America, Steve, on medical insurance or out of your own pocket, roughly 200. That was an average, sometimes a little bit more, 400, occasionally $600. But if we took the 200 just as a baseline, that was $200, which is £140 as we do this show in 2025, per month for one injection. So when I read a clinic saying, and I quote, the daily TRT, microdosing of testosterone, is the gold standard, it occurred to me, Steve, does Joe have to go to the clinic every single fucking day? Even if Joe went to the clinic once a week, how much is Joe being charged for the weekly injections, never mind the daily injections? Are they trusting Joe to inject himself? Are they getting, arguably, Steve, more than $200? I would say, especially here in the UK, Steve, abso-fucking-lutely. So again, the argument that is a constant state of testosterone is desirable, not really. It doesn't happen in nature. That it's natural. No, I've just argued against that. And show me the money. Show me the money. I think, Steve, you used an analogy when we talked about certain things. Let's say, for example, that we've used an analogy on other shows of having a sports car. Can you imagine if, as Bugatti is a great example, Steve, I believe the service some years ago for a Veyron started at $10,000 for your annual service. And if you needed the tires change, it was $30,000. So this was an annual service. Can you imagine, listeners, a daily service and how much Bugatti would charge you if you had to come even just for 5-10 minutes every single day or weekly, or even if they allowed you to do things in the house, in the garage, to your car, they would make money out of it. That's how clinics work. So talk a little bit about that, Steve.
Yeah.
What do you think the positives as well as the negatives are? So start with the positives.
Well, let's start with why people microdose anything, if we could, before we get into the clinic thing, because I wanted you to talk about that. And why people would microdose anything. So some people, we see this on the forum, some people swear by microdosing because they say it helps reduce side effects. So it could be a placebo effect, or it could be something based on how they are reacting. It also could be that people prefer to use smaller amounts of volume in their injections because they can't handle a larger amount. Some people, when they inject 3 cc's of gear, yes, they end up with a lot of post-injection pain. So they would rather microdose a smaller amount in their cycle and do smaller volume and do it more often. And you're going to use up more needles when you do that. But if it works for them, it works for them. So in other words, let's say you're doing 500 milligrams of testosterone and you're doing 500 milligrams of Equipoise. So instead of doing, loading up with, let's say it's 250 milligrams a milliliter, just as an example. So that would be 4 cc's of the gear that you would need a week. All right. So let's say you're doing 2 injections twice a week at 2 cc's each, and you get post-injection pain by loading up 2 cc's into a syringe. Now, most of these syringes are 3 milliliter, so you can get up to 3 cc's. Back in the old days when I used to run more heavier cycles, I would want to load up the syringe. To me, it was advantageous just to do 1 or 2 injections a week and load up the entire 3 cc syringe. Would I get more post-injection pain with 3 cc's of anabolic steroids versus just doing, let's say, 1 cc? Yes, I would, especially if you're more post-injection prone. So some people are okay when instead of doing 4 injections a week, they'd rather do 8 injections a week or 12 injections or even 16 injections because they're not getting post-injection pain that way.
Yeah.
The disadvantage of doing that is now you have to continuously rotate muscle groups and you can open yourself up to abscesses, especially sterile abscesses, which aren't going to kill you or anything, but it is a problem because the oil can lump because you're doing such a shallow injection. You're not going deep into the muscle because you're using a smaller needle. They'll use a smaller needle. They'll use a 29-gauge needle instead of a 25-gauge needle or a 23-gauge needle. And that will be a lot easier for them. They'd rather do the smaller volume. It's going to be less painful and it may have less post-injection pain because you're doing a less amount. So that, those are all reasons why they would do it. Another reason that they may be noticing less side effects, especially early on in their cycle, is because, as I said earlier, when you microdose, let's say you do 25 milligrams of testosterone 4 times a week versus doing the 100 milligrams just right off the bat. So maybe because they're noticing that 100 milligrams hitting their body quicker that first couple weeks, they're noticing, well, I'm getting less side effects when I microdose. It's not that you're getting less side effects necessarily. It's that it's just entering your bloodstream and building up in your bloodstream a lot slower because you're doing 25 milligrams as your first injection versus doing 100 milligrams your first injection. Or you're doing, I can make it even bigger where when I say, instead of doing, let's say 500 milligrams right off the bat, and doing 500 milligrams once a week, or doing 500 milligrams right off the bat going into your system versus doing 100 milligrams right off the bat in your system, and then doing that over the course of the entire week. So it's going to take longer. It'll take an extra couple weeks to reach peak in your system. So maybe those estrogenic side effects will, not maybe, they will. The estrogenic side effects will hit you a lot quicker when you're doing more right off the bat and not microdosing. So that's the difference. So they go through that and then they think, well, microdosing has less side effects. But over time, as the cycle continues, as you get into it, it's not going to matter because eventually, if you're going to be prone to estrogenic side effects, it's eventually going to hit you one way or the other. But it will take 2, 3 weeks longer to hit you when you're microdosing. So that's the difference. And the way I look at it is, it's going to hit you one way or the other. So what difference does it make if it hits you within, 2 or 3 weeks quicker on your cycle, versus waiting, because at the end of the day, you're going to get more in your system right off the bat. So it's going to be this, at the end of the day, it's going to be the same shit regardless. But like I said, some people just prefer to microdose, and that's just their thing.
I'm literally looking at a line here, Steve, and this is the sort of idea of the thought process behind it rather than the science. And as an example here, this is the line that caught my attention. Despite scientific studies demonstrating that tri-monthly doses of testosterone and decanate are effective, this is obviously for treating people with low testosterone, many TRT patients and doctors that believe that the more frequent dosing is even more effective. I've emphasized the word believe, what you think versus what the science proves. There's an argument here, and this goes what I said again to those that are sensitive, in my opinion, and it's a very small percentage. The most common complaint that from men on high dose TRT plans is feeling unstable, inverted commas, that they've used, not myself, and having an inconsistent improvement in symptoms. In other words, they feel great at the beginning, they don't feel so good at the end, because of the peaks and troughs. Immediately after having an injection, men typically experience an extreme elevation in testosterone levels. This is often accompanied by unwelcome feelings of anxiety and bloating from raised estrogen levels and evidence of their body's response. This is the thing that I kind of, again, this is the TRT thing versus the PED thing, Steve, which is, I've argued even with the high usages of testosterone on the forum versus moderate amounts, because we talked about safety protocols and long-term applications of steroid use and so on and so forth. We've noticed, for example, that certain users like to go up into the multiples of grams. And I'll use my local gym owner as an example here. My local gym owner competed, I believe his heaviest body weight on stage is around 160 pounds. He's about 5 foot 3, 5 foot 4 inches tall. Very aesthetic looking when he's in great condition and when he's competing back in the day, and even more recently. And he's kind of looks muscular and look good all the time. Slightly tongue in cheek, we're talking sometimes 20 mil, 27 mil. I've run the numbers, Steve, in excess of 5,000 milligrams a week, similar to certain pros and even a former WABA pro that we've discussed on these shows. Marco Louis, aka Monstro, in excess of 6,000 milligrams a week. And yet I outweigh him by probably well in excess of 100 pounds, way more than 100 pounds, 100, maybe 150 pounds right now as we do this show, and I've never used more than 1,600 milligrams a week. Most of my cycles have been around 1,000 milligrams, and I do very, very well on that. So there's an it's the individual response to how you feel on testosterone. There's a probable preference, psychological as much as practical. The science, and again, referencing what I've just discussed, doesn't really see that it's more effective. In fact, arguably, the science says that multiple, it says tri-monthly. So that's once, three times a month. So roughly every 10 days was, in the example given, more way more effective than daily dosages. It's proven to be effective versus what people thought or felt. So I think it's that element of how they feel on testosterone versus the actual health benefits, etc. And again, here's a thing that you need to consider. And I use my gym owner as an example because of the difference in height and the difference in body weight. When we're talking about some of these practical applications, whether it's PD or TRT, we kind of almost have an average Joe ideal person in our minds. But the reality is thus, when it comes to TRT, the age is probably going to be older than a typical steroid user. The condition of the person in question will probably be slightly more out of shape. I would actually argue probably quite a bit out of shape, Steve. Doesn't necessarily, taking TRT, most people, doesn't mean that you lift weights or go to the gym or have a tight diet. You might do some sort of recreational sport, tennis, badminton. You might even play squash. You might even go jogging. But you're not lifting heavy weights. You're not looking to get more muscular. You're just looking, more often than not, to feel better at your age and the condition you're in. So that's the TRT side of it. What about the PD side of it? And again, the majority of people on our forums are looking for the PED, the performance enhancement, muscular, size, strength, strafe, etc. Some are, and I'm including myself when I'm not on cycle, are obviously going to be on TRT, and it's the difference through the year when they're on TRT versus when they're on cycle and looking for anabolic gains and anabolic response. And the anabolic side of it doesn't really work. The performance side of it doesn't really kind of apply to it. See, I'm not seeing, as I say, and I've had this conversation multiple times, a benefit to the end result. Do you get leaner by having levels constant? No. Do you get leaner because you are, in Steve's example, using a steroid four times a week instead of once a week? No. Do you get more muscular? Do you get stronger? Have you got photographs of a cycle when you did one or two injections a week, and then another cycle when it was almost every single day, and you looked better in the second example? No, you have not. So it must come down to personal preference and arguably how you feel versus the actual science and actual proof. There is one example I looked at, Steve, and you and I discussed this on another show, was a Halo thread when we did, I think, on one of the log shows. And the person there was looking to use Halo testing, microdosing, very small amounts on a daily basis. And he was talking about neural feedback and neural programming with the body vis-a-vis teaching the body to respond in a certain way. I believe big thing for him was carbohydrates, but also to enhance his strength. And I talked about the whole neural feedback of doing certain exercises a great many times, like the Olympic lifters. I couldn't see that Halo testing would somehow enhance, even at a microdose, a person's aggression or better use of carbohydrates in that example. And we haven't really seen too much more of that. To me, Steve, I can't, and it's just a personal preference here, I wouldn't want to do daily injections of, for example, Sustan on the Deca. I certainly wouldn't want to rotate for, even if I did a single daily injection, that would still require me to do seven different sites on my body. If we get into the whole bodybuilding stack specifically of two or three steroids or competing, it's not unusual for competing bodybuilders, top pros, amateurs that are competing at a high level, to need, because of the various products that they're using in their stack, and it's not the same product every day, to pin almost every day. But then when you're microdosing, that would require multiple pins or injections per day. So then we're getting into the whole site rotation, like Steve said, being, you know, be super careful or really, really comfortable with stuff. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's going to have to come down to, arguably, Steve, what you want and how you feel versus the practical applications. And for PED purposes, as per the majority of our listeners, the end result. So I'm going to say if you feel testosterone, some people, when they take Tren, for example, Steve, absolutely feel like fucking God. Halo testing at high amount pre-powerlifting competition and certain other steroids, track drops as an example, pre-powerlifting or strongman competition, you feel like you're going to tear shit up. You feel like you're going to go out and get some PRs. But that specific amount, taken at a high dosage, for a very the day of the competition for an 8-hour, 5-hour event. To do that on a daily basis, I don't, most of the time, and I think Steve's the same as me, there might be a small sense of well-being, sensible dosages. There's certainly a sense of well-being that comes from being stronger, leaner, more muscular, absolutely. But I'm not that sensitive, and most people aren't that sensitive to the variations, small variations of testosterone. When it comes to Tren, maybe some people are. When it comes to Supertrol, maybe some people are. So, yeah, we'll talk about that, Steve. The clinic thing, as I said earlier on, to me, is very much of I have to look at why they think it's a good idea. And, again, zero science to back up multiple dosages versus less frequent dosaging. And the money, Steve, follow the money. Take any clinic that private hands in this country or in the States that you're paying for either out of your insurance or with your own money. I mean, let me just use this as an example. Steve's American, so he'll be able to argue this better for me. Do you think that your medical insurance company would love for you to be able to go to a clinic every single day or multiple times per week, Steve, and pay out from your medical insurance for you to be able to do that versus, for example, one or two injections per month? Talk about that app before we do anything else.
Well, the insurance company, you know, they like it in the terms of they just keep raising your premiums, you know, so that it gives them another reason to raise your premium. So they don't really care. But, you know, I'll give you an example on clinics. So let's say you're going to a clinic and, you know, each visit they charge you. So wouldn't they want you to come more often to do more injections than necessary? Like, wouldn't they want you to come several times a week? That's how they keep their business going. I used to go do allergy injections. I fell for the grift of allergy injections, which is a complete grift, in my opinion. I know it works on some people, but it sure as hell didn't work for me. But I would go to the clinic three times a week. And I'd sit there. They'd inject me, and I was required to sit there for like 15 or 20 minutes after the injection. Waste my fucking time. And then I'd go home. So they make me come in. Each time I would come in, they would bill me. And even with my insurance, each time it was like a $20 charge. So I'd have to go there, pay them $20, wait for them to call me up. Then I'd come out there, and they inject me with their magic serum, which is supposedly going to cure my allergies. And then I would sit there for 20 minutes like a jackass, wasting my time. And then I walk out the door. So that's basically the same thing with these anti-aging clinics. So if they're charging you to come in more often to inject, or if they're letting you take it home and they're selling you more needles, let's say the box of syringes and needles is $25 a box, and they're making a profit off each box of maybe $5 or $10 because it's hell of a lot cheaper for them to buy it in bulk. They probably make even more on that box. That's money going into their pocket. That's paying their overhead. So it makes more sense for them to kind of push the whole micro dosing thing because obviously they're going to make money. So if you come in there once every 6 weeks and you only have to do one injection and you're done, how are they supposed to make money, you know, in that situation? Their office would be empty. They want their office having a lot of people coming in. They want, you know, to be there and having to wait.
Steve, the pharmacy company gets the same amount of money. The clinic, the people that are providing you with these products, look, I'll make it real easy. I buy, like a great many of the listeners to this show, my syringes, my needles via Amazon or via eBay. There are a bunch of places online that will give you medical supplies. And I believe, Steve, I think I paid with a sharp's pin to dispose of my pins properly. I think that was about £12. So that'd be about 15, $16. And for that, you get a sharp's pin, 2 or 3 litres, a nice safe container to put your used pins in, your used sharps, 100 needles, 25 gauge blues. I'm looking at one right now on my desk. And I think I brought 10 or 15 barrels of syringes, the actual thing that the needle goes onto, because you can use a syringe more often than you'd use the needle. The needle needs to be changed every single time. Now, 12 quid, 15, $16. Now, if I go to a clinic, it ain't going to charge me $16, Steve. They're going to charge me, I would argue, at least $100 just for enough pins, needles and syringes and a sharps container just for 1 month. It's going to be at least that amount. And that's without the actual product that I'm injecting in. Look, imagine this. Imagine that Walmart's in America or Asda, one or two of the largest supermarkets in the UK, in the States, would only let you buy the equivalent of enough food for 1 day. So you would have to go back every single day to go shopping. You're going to spend more on gas. You're going to take time out of your day. You're going to have to make sure that you've got time after work or school or whatever else you're doing, looking after a grandparent, whatever. And they would say, but this is a better way of doing things because you're getting a constant supply of bread and potatoes. It makes zero sense. Absolutely. This is the reason why if you go to the supermarket more often, you will spend more money because you are persuaded to buy more things on a more regular basis. And it's not beneficial to the supermarket anymore. It's beneficial to the supply chain. And it certainly wouldn't be beneficial to you. So when it comes to more frequent anything, if there's no scientific data or basis for its existence, and it's about feeling and sensations, when it comes to clinics, I would absolutely argue that more frequent equals more money. The pharmaceutical company, I've talked about this before, if it was a question of per dose, it would be the same. They would just raise the prices like Steve said. A clinic can say, oh, if we're going to get you to come daily, it's going to be this amount. But if we inject you once a month, it's $200. But I guarantee it's going to cost you more than $200. We'd have to go to the clinic once a week. It would be more than $200 a month just for service fees and add-ons and God knows what else. The more times they got you through the door, the more chance they've got to cross-sell you or upsell you something else. So, yeah, I'm literally, when I gave the example earlier on, they've got the name of the doctor that talks about this to the right-hand side with all his qualifications listed right afterwards, and he talks about feeling and maybe or might. That's not fucking science, see? That's opinion, and it's not factual. And then literally when they refer to it, I mean, he quotes this. According to the British National Formulary, a single dose of 250 milligrams of testosterone nitrate should be injected intramuscularly every 3 to 6 weeks. Now, you and I can argue against that. However, injecting a smaller dose every 2 to 3 days may help to stabilize the release of hormone in the body. May. If this person done 10 years to become a GP, a specific expert in his field. He says a specialist of TRT and a committee member of the BSSM, I've no idea what that is. In America, he would be an MD, a medical doctor, the doctor that he would go and see to. But if he was involved in a clinic, he should be specifically interested in hormones and endocrinology, with multiple letters after his name indicating his level of education. And he's talking about might and maybe and feeling. No, that's not science. Science doesn't back it up. So look, if and just as an example, we'll talk about this now, Steve. If we're going to go with microdosing, we look at Parapharma products, and we're going to talk, I think, when we talked about earlier on esters. So let's touch upon short ester Parapharma products and longer ester Parapharma products to give the listeners both options. Options with short esters and options with longer esters.
Well, let me start with the obvious one, the testosterone. I gave the kind of the example earlier with testosterone cypionate, but I'll give the example this time with testosterone enanthate. Those are, of course, the two biggest sellers when it comes to not just parapharma, but the entire industry. A lot of people like to use testosterone. They'll use it as a base in their cycle. They'll use it as part of TRT. So if you do want to go with the parapharma option in microdose, let's say instead of doing 250 milligrams twice a week to get 500 milligrams, you would do 100 milligrams five times a week. So you'd microdose it that way. So you just pick out five times a week where you want to inject, and you go with that situation. In either situation, you're still going to end up doing 500 milligrams a week total, but it's going to be less volume per injection. So that would be an option for you. Let's say you want to go with Primo and Primobolan. Some of the advantages with Primobolan with microdosing with lower volume is because a lot of people have a difficulty with Primobolan when it comes to post-injection pain. I know in the with Parapharma, their Primo is very, very smooth. They made sure that it was much easier to inject than normal products. So one of the things that's cool about Parapharma is instead of taking the Primobolan, and if you wanted to go a smaller amount, you could do 100 milligrams of Primobolan. You could go the Arnold way, because Arnold actually back in the 70s, he used to microdose Primo because it would come in amps, which were 100 milligrams, and he would take 1 amp per day, even though he could have broken open three different amps and taken 300 milligrams twice a week, or taken, you know, the entire thing once a week if you wanted to. But he would microdose it once a week because it was a lot easier for him to do it that way. So if you wanted to use Primobolan, you could just do it the Arnold way and just do 100 milligrams a week for your cycle. But man, you're going to go through a lot of fucking needles. Like if you're doing a 12-week cycle, monster, and you're injecting seven times a week, that's a lot of fucking needles, man. That's 12 times 7 is 84. You're going through 84 needles doing it that way versus doing Jesus. It twice a week and just going with 24 needles. Absolutely. But that's an example of how you could do it. And if you want to try micro, what are some of your examples?
I'm just thinking here, Steve, for example, one of my favorite steroids, as regular listeners will know, is Deca, combined with Sustanon for bulking. But we've also discussed on other shows NPP. And NPP, arguably, Steve, is a shorter ester, the quicker acting version of Deca. And in the case of Parapharma, they have an NPP 150 versus a Deca 300. And there are certain members of our forum that are big fans of NPP. They like the fact that it acts quicker. They like the fact it's quicker into the system. They like the benefits that they get from Deca. And also, it tends to be that the MPP users tend to be leaner than I am, so I'm looking to bulk up on Deca when combined with Sustanon. They're using some form of testosterone with MPP, and they're looking to be leaner, as one example. Another example here, Steve, they've got a Masteron propionate 100, a MAST-P 100, and a MAST-E in amphate 200. So again, someone that's looking to cut, someone that's looking to be lean, someone specifically looking for harder muscles, has the ability perhaps to see quicker results in that situation. Again, they'd have to be dieting and training very hard. And again, it might be also that you're doing different steroids on different days. So there's that argument right there. Just as another example with Steve, I've actually used their CutStack 150 product, which is all short-acting esters, required me to inject three times a day. But again, it was 1 mil. So it's not micro-dosing as such. But had I used, for example, longer-acting esters of the following free steroids at very small amounts in this particular product, it would require more volume of product or more frequent injections, different thing over the week. So for example, here, Steve, 1 mil three times a week, as I said, CutStack 150, that's 50 milligrams of testosterone propionate, 50 milligrams of trenbolone acetate, and 50 milligrams of short-acting version of Masteron. And again, I had fantastic recomposition results on that. I've still gone down to 2 belt sizes, haven't needed to change my belt since. And my body weight went down from 327 and a half to 320. And I followed that up with one of my favorite bulkers as before, Sustan Deca, and rebounded arguably up to 336, which was an all-time high. And that's just using that particular product. And arguably, again, you will sometimes see people on cut stacks versus bulking stacks or strength stacks for different reasons, and especially comes down to as you get leaner, Steve, I think you can see more of what's going on, and this also applies to competition for shorter acting esters. Let me touch on momentarily the idea of competition stacks. I've discussed this on other shows. there's a bunch of issues in terms of what you're using, the frequency of injection. You don't want swellings on your body. You don't want bulges. You don't want sterile abscesses, as Steve said. You don't want unsightly scarring or bumps, lumps and bumps that shouldn't be there. And I've seen examples of this online, especially as you're getting leaner and leaner and leaner into a show. What you're also typically doing is you're removing the longer-acting esters, anything that's going to make you hold water. So you tend to start using a lot shorter esters, again, in that example. And you would arguably, Steve, take certain products out just because the body's getting drier, the body's getting leaner, it's becoming more sensitive to what you're doing. This can include food, carbohydrate manipulation, and so on and so forth, because you're looking to bring a certain particular look on the day of the competition. So if you were fat, if you were more bulked up, and you use a longer acting ester and you've used a higher volume of products, any ugly lumps and bumps that you might get will be hidden. But when you're in competition shape, when you've got that skin paper fucking thin, Steve, the last thing you want is a weird looking bump on the outside of your delt or on the outside of your quad and so on and so forth. And occasionally people make mistakes. They get crazy nervous. The head goes and they inject because they think they need to do something before a show. Occasionally a prep coach will fuck up and so on and so forth. So you will sometimes see that. So that's another reason, arguably, for using shorter esters, certainly in that situation, and arguably small amounts that aren't going to have these ugly lumps and bumps that some people might get that would normally be hidden, but are more prominent and more obvious when you're super, super lean. And again, this goes back to what I said earlier on in the show, Steve. When we look at these arguments with these back and forths, it comes down to that individual's response. For example, there are products that you and I have used and other people have used where using a prop or short-acting ester has caused them discomfort vis-a-vis post-injection pain. And your other users, and I've probably been this myself, the only time I get post-injection pain is when I'm cockeyed trying to inject and I'm moving the bloody needle around inside the muscle because I'm trying to press it at a certain angle. If I hold it in position, if it doesn't move, I don't get post-injection pain. The issue in the past with post-injection pain used to be things like the way that the product was put together by the lab, by the supplier. And I would argue, Steve, that the incidence of that happening now is, again, less than 1%. We've done this on shows when we talked about high milligram per milliliter products. Used to be almost a given that you're going to be uncomfortable. It's still kind of a given, but not for everybody. That if you use a short-acting ester like prop, testosterone, lots of people get post-injection pain from testosterone prop. And, of course, one of the issues with post-injection pain might be inflammation at the site of injection. And even that in and of itself, even if you're normal kind of in condition and you're looking to get lean, you're not super lean like a competitor, that can actually bring on an inflammatory response throughout the body. So the argument again goes back and forth on how your body responds. So what else are we looking at here, Steve? I'm looking at, as we said before, multiples of testosterone. I'll touch on something that I touched upon before and reference this to Parapharma. I said earlier in the show, and this is the reason why we talk about companies like Parapharma, it used to be the case, and it still is the case on a handful of crappy sites, Steve, that we don't recommend. You go on there and you will see a product and you'll see maybe one or two examples of testosterone. Or worse, they have a lot of products, but they've only got this version of this product available. So they've only got the enanthate, they don't have the prop. They've only got the longer acting version of Trend, they don't have the short acting version of Trend. So certain things aren't available, certain things are out of stock. When you're talking about companies like Parapharma, you don't get that. So when I look at here, Steve, I'm looking at, as I said earlier on in the show, 45 different products, in fact, more than 45 different products, all of the esterized versions that you could possibly want, certain products that are already pre-blended for you, products that come and go in terms of popularity, people use them, and then for whatever reason they fall off, don't get used anymore. Multiples of orals, again, Steve, something you and I have talked about on shows, and this could even arguably be done with regards to the whole microdosing thing again, where we talk about short esters, pretty much every oral is in and out of your system half-life-wise, 8 hours, 12 hours, some less. So that we're back to the injectables versus orals. So the people that are microdosing are using small amounts of various forms of testosterone daily, but won't always be keen on using orals because of the stress on their organs, vis-a-vis their liver and their kidneys. So they'll argue against that, but be okay with the idea of doing daily injections of testosterone. So there's some back and forth again on that basis as well. And again, it will come down to what their specific requirements are. And that's another application here, Steve. Again, person that's lean and in shape, and as I said earlier on competing, I could see using a shorter acting ester versus someone like myself. Even if I do an 8 or 12 week injectable cycle, most of my cycles are focused around me being as strong as I possibly can or training a peak level of strength, whether that's oral or injectable. But even if it's an injectable, one of the things I like with the longer acting esters, in fact, you and I have touched upon this on other shows, and I've referenced Substanon and Deca from Parapharma again, is the fact that it's still in my system after my last injection, let's say week 8 of a Sustan Deca cycle. How long is it still in my system for? Fucking weeks. I made the mistake of not recognizing the fact that the reason why I'd maintained a level of strength on the bench press above and beyond what it had been at the beginning of the cycle, not just because of training, was because the Sustanon and Deca hadn't cleared my system. The Sustanon specifically, we were looking at another 3 weeks when I was still feeling the effects. And arguably, Steve, the half-life was actually beyond that. It was just me still feeling the effects post-cycle. So there was even an argument for that, Steve, against using shorter esters or microdosing, because I would still feel the benefits of being on cycle even when I'm off cycle, because I've used longer esters, because I've done the bigger injections on a daily basis, and so on and so forth. I think the last thing, in terms of the whole injecting microdosing, etc., it's again a small percentage, probably less than 10% of users. If you're new, and I'll let Steve talk about this as well before we talk about Parapharma. If you're new to the whole idea of using anabolic steroids, and specifically injecting anabolic steroids, Steve, some people just get really uncomfortable with the whole idea of injecting. And I think there might be a psychological aspect to 2 mil, 3 mil, like Steve said, versus almost being comfortable psychologically with injecting a small amount. So I'll talk about that briefly before we talk about Parapharma and finish the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be a lot easier to someone. I know people, they've been using oral-only steroids for 20 or 30 years. And they now to the point where, yeah, I want to go on TRT, but I don't want to inject. Well, if you're going to do TRT, you can do a very small, use a small needle, a 29-gauge needle, and try to just get it as deep as possible, even though the needle is only a half an inch. So you can microdose it, you know, that way, and just do smaller amounts. And a lot of people, it's easier for them to do that, you know, 2-3 times a week than to just inject once a week or once every 2 weeks, a larger amount with a bigger needle. So at the end of the day, that's how it is. But look, check out Parapharma, guys. Come on our forum. They're excellent. They have excellent sales. They have excellent products. They have excellent service. They always have, you know, products in stock, and they have everything you need on their website. So whether you want to try this microdosing thing for yourself, or you want to do it a different way and just experiment, just definitely come on our forum, and you can do a log too on microdosing if you want, and kind of test it out and see if it really does make a difference for you.
Absolutely, Steve. They have pretty much everything you would need for almost every single kind of stack of cycle that you guys could come up with. Definitely do what Steve says. Come on to the forum. Check out Parapharma. Check out Parapharma logs. Check out my Parapharma log. Blogs that Steve's run using Parapharma products, but I would be especially interested in seeing users come onto the forum, listeners come onto the forum and run a log. If you're a big fan of microdosing, tell us why. Argue against me, my negative aspects as well as the positives. Show me better results. Show me how it worked for you as an individual. And I'm sure that there will be other listeners that would love to see that if it did work for you, that they can apply that application. Arguably, if you also, it doesn't play out, if it doesn't work, we still get to see the end results as whether the theory panned out, whether there was a practical application based on what your response was versus feelings and the idea of something as and the science and so on and so forth. The end results will be your everything, Steve. Please note, as always, we are not doctors and the opinions are ours. It is our view based on our experience and views on the topic. a podcast for informational purposes and entertainment only, the freedom of speech and the First Amendment.